This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yesterday afternoon, the Oregon State Legislature adjourned its session, and that's the focus of some of what we're covering today, certainly on a statewide level, but we wanted to get some local reaction as quickly as possible. State Representative Christine Goodwin joining us on the phone. She represents Southern Douglas County, along with areas further to the south, reaching all the way down to right around the Central Point area. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Kyle.
So are you still in Salem at this point?
No, I just got home last night. yeah, we landed the plane. It's been a bumpy ride, but at 5 o'clock, we finally sine-died the 82nd legislative session in the state of Oregon. So we have completed our constitutional responsibilities to the citizens of Oregon, and one of the biggest responsibilities we have is to pass the agency budgets and to keep government running.
Now, one of the aspects to this final weekend, in fact, initially, there was some thought that the adjournment might come on Saturday. I know a lot of things came up apparently early in the day Saturday on some legislation, and that backed things up a bit. But was there any fear that you weren't going to make it through everything by midnight last night?
No, I don't think. We'd had to work till midnight, we would have. The real hiccups were on the Senate side, because denying quorum allowed bills to really back up there. And so then voters, just for people to understand, and I say this to people because I didn't know much really about the process of legislating, of bill making in Salem, but there are two chambers, the Senate and the House, and if one chamber passes bills, it still has to go to the other house for passing as well. And then if either chamber has an amendment, then there has to be a concurrence, so it has to come back to that original. If we passed it in the House and the Senate has an amendment, it has to come back to us. So this was flying everywhere. Bills were racing from second, can't vote on them until they get to third readings. There's a first reading, which is announcing the bills, second reading, which means, it's on deck and it's ready to go in to the floor for debate. So it is, wow. I mean, first of all, I must say, there are just too many bills. There are just too many bills. I mean, we're dealing with thousands of bills. And then, of course, at the end, there's all the amendments on bills, which is a change to the bill. And they can be small amendments or they can be very large. It can be what's called a gut and stuff. And so they've completely reworked the bill. So you may think you have an idea of what that bill is doing and where you come down on that in your vote, and then that can be radically changed. So following all of this is really intense. And then meanwhile, the Rules Committee, Ways and Means, some of those committees are still working while bills are making their way through. So quite a complex process.
Probably the geeky political science part of my brain would have been fascinated watching things over the weekend. Talk about on Sunday, were you on the floor most of the day, or was it a lot of back and forth floor time and then back into committees?
Yeah, well, we were on the floor off and on. So there's recesses, stand at ease, again, waiting for bills. Senate were killing bills. There were still several senators that were not there, so everybody was watching anxiously, especially. So the big suspenseful bill at the very end was the governor's bill, 3414, and that is a housing bill. And what that would do would free up, because we have a fundamental problem with housing. She's declared she wants to build 36,000 units. Well, you've got to have land to do that, and we have such restrictions on land in Oregon. You also have to allow, you're going to have to make some loosening up some of these requirements. I mean, you can't just keep piling on regulations and restrictions, and certainly regulations that deter producers, people who would actually build this housing, from doing so. They're also shutting down timber harvest. So it makes no sense to me. You want to grow housing, but you do everything the opposite of that. But this bill actually really divided her party. The Democrats are the ones that defeated this bill, and she's not happy about this. We also had, our farm people really had a problem with the bill, and it's a legitimate concern that perhaps we will, some of this farmland that's just outside urban growth boundary, because what this bill would do is allow us to expand and bring in some new land into the urban growth boundary, some of that's farmland. So there's fear that, you know, our farmland will be consumed. However, the individual farmer had the choice in that. A lot of farmers declare that they have some land, actually, that's not really used exclusively for farming. So it gave them some flexibility, I thought, with the farmers. I voted yes for this bill. I like the idea of, we've got to look at growing our urban, or expanding our urban growth boundary.
Well, a lot of issues, and predictably, I came in last night, and the press releases from both chambers, both parties, perceptions, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, about how the session went, were radically different. Talk about your your perceptions and maybe the good points and not good points that you saw.
Well, first, I had some wins in the session, some things that I felt were really valuable. The first, first of all, my veterans unclaimed cremains bill finally passed. So we had some funding issues. I introduced this in the 22 short session. So I was glad to see that finally pass through. I also passed, I have been advocating for our local home, our pharmacies. Our pharmacies are really closing in record numbers, and we are going to have pharmacy deserts. And I don't see that good for our communities at all, that they have to go further and further away from home to find a pharmacy that's available to them. And it's a very complicated, has to do with the pharmacy benefit managers and this fee structure. They carve back, they claw back, it's called these fees, retroactively from pharmacy, and it's really killing them. So my bill really went after that, to prohibit them being able to do that. It's not enough. There has to be more in this process, but that is a really good step to identify that they, after a claim, a pharmacy adjudicates a claim, that should be the end of the story. They can't come back months later and go, oh, hey, by the way, we're not going to pay you on that claim as we had promised. So that was a success. The other big one that I was happy to see was our death tax exemption for family farmers, foresters, fishermen. It gives them a $15 million exemption. Because what's happening, of course, is these family farms and properties, when mom and dad die, they, you know, are divided up. They have to pay the taxes on it. A sibling who wants to continue to run the farm, an example, has to pay off the other siblings, or just in general, even to pay the debt. Because a lot of these farmers and ranchers, an example, are land rich but cash poor. So there's a huge debt, a tax to them upon death of family. And so that's a big win. I was excited about that. We did expand the access to education and healthcare in rural Oregon by allowing our community colleges to offer a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. So that was important. There was also an increase in housing supply by allowing you to develop another dwelling on your property, on your farm forest, if it's not identified as a high wildfire risk. So, and there was, you know, a lot of confusion about that zoning and farm forest. And I saw that a lot in Planning Commission, that people would want to do that additional dwelling on their property and weren't allowed to. So I think we've overcome that. We are expanding rural broadband. We are increasing penalties for possession of fentanyl. and we funded schools. So we really fully funded schools, and that's a $10.2 billion investment.
What about the status of having an Oregon State Veterans Home on the campus of the Roseburg VA Medical Center? Where did that come out?
That's still working. So here's my, I just talked to Senator Brock Smith about that. He has really been working that bill. That will be bonded, and we have to have, you know, it's tied up with the federal money. We have to make sure that that federal money flows within 2 years, or then we pay interest on that bond. So when I left it yesterday, that was what he said. We are still getting that organized, but I'm hoping that that's going to happen, and we, because that's going to be a great investment for our community. And then I had a couple other big CapCon, capital construction wins, and with Rep. Osborne. So Rep. Virgil Osborne and I have been in there really representing Douglas County, and we've gotten $8 million for the UCC Medical Career Hub. So that was wonderful. I know that they really want to expand their education and their healthcare opportunities in training people here locally. And because, as you said, my district goes all the way, I do have Central Point. So all the way down to Central Point. So I was also working on a Rogue Community College Tech Center. They have a wonderful tech center down there, and they want to expand that. And so we were able to get $7 million for that. And then in Central Point, the Oregon State Police are doing a big facility expansion down there, which actually helps our whole Southwest Oregon area. And that was a big $27 million. Rep. Osborne and I also got some new construction money for a fire station in the Kellogg Rural Fire District. So that's always nice to bring some money home to your district.
What about coming out of the session? Now, you were on the House side. It was the Senate where the denial of quorum and walkout took place. What's the perception, though, about the strained relationships? I've read some articles that say in some cases there are some folks that are pretty strained, and maybe even some lawmakers that may end up just resigning.
Well, yes, it is strained. There's no doubt about it. I don't know all the inside scoop. I know a few of the senators well and have gotten different perspectives. I know the fight really originated just out of the complete lack of any bipartisanship. And I think I shared that last time I was on your show with you. But the real tipping point was this 2002. And it was the complete, on the parental rights piece of that bill. So actually what it was doing is opening up abortion to any age girl without any parental rights. We thought that is just an open door to coyotes to bring in young girls. Child trafficking is a horrible problem. We could see them coming in from all states, like, yippee, we get to bring girls into Oregon for their abortions. Nobody would know. So we fought that. It seemed like a small piece of the bill, but considering on the heel of Dobbs and all of the emotion about that it, you know, it was just hard, even though, and I also shared this with viewers, this was not a conversation about whether abortion will be available in Oregon. That wasn't what it was about at all. Abortion is readily available, and we're an extreme state. It's available right up through third trimester. So that wasn't it. The sticking point was on this parental rights, and the Senate did win on that battle. So in that case, and of course it was also on the gun laws and the unconstitutionality of the gun laws, and really by and large that 2005 just was completely dismantled. The only thing was a small piece of licensing on the parts and ghost guns, and everything else, the gun-free zones, the restrictions for 18 to 20-year-olds, and all the things that they knew that were going to be challenged federally. So I think it was a big win on 2005. And, you know, I'm a very strong no in 2002. I did not, I am strongly in the mainstream with most of the polling in Oregon that people do not want children surgically transitioned, hormonally or surgically transitioned. This education is happening to young children, telling them that they, you can be whatever gender you want. Let's start you on hormones and puberty blockers. I think that's appalling. And so I fought that bill very hard, right up to the last minute on the floor. And a lot of our members on the House floor walked on that. I mean, we couldn't deny quorum. So there was no walk. To truly walk, it means you completely 100% deny quorum, and we couldn't get there. And that's some complicated political reasons for some of those reps who are up in northern areas and really have a tightrope to walk there. But so those were the sticking points in the Senate, and I think they found enough resolution. They had said all along, we will come back to pass agency bills. Because that's really constitutionally what we're bound to do. This will shake out for some time, whether their decisions on the Senate side were good. They certainly left the House in an untenable position. It was very tricky for us to navigate the waters because just too many unknowns.
For the GOP senators, the group that was out past the excused absence threshold, I guess if you want to call it that, based on the recent Oregon ballot measure, it appears that they will not be able to run for re-election for their office when their term comes up. I know they're planning to challenge that one. If they are not successful, that's going to open up a number of seats, which likely means a number of folks in the House are going to attempt to move that direction. And again, in 2 years or 4 years, kind of between the two terms, you could see a lot of new lawmakers there in Salem. How does that potentially change things?
Well, you're exactly right. That's what is happening. You asked initially, and I didn't answer this completely, but there's like 6 or 7 senators that weren't going to run again anyway. Now you have these new senators that have lost their – they still may be – that may not be final, but I can't speak to that. There's just a lot of talk about that right now. But as it stands, indeed, many of those senators have lost their ability to run for that seat again. So, yeah, there's jockeying going on. And even in my case, my senator right now, because I'm House District 4 with House District 3, my senator is Art Robinson. And he's has not been in good health for quite some time, so it's not likely that he will run for the seat. So that is a possibility for me. I'm not sure whether I would do that. Not ready to make that decision, but that is a possibility.
Now, is that that would put then his district is Cave Junction, part of Grants Pass, right?
Yeah, he's got a lot of Grants Pass. He's got all 3 and 4. And so now my district 4 is southern. That's a districts used to be a lot more easily defined and described, but I have all southern Douglas County. So I'm, you know, I've got my Mills and Riddle and Canyonville and Days Creek, you know, Glendale, all the way. I've got Gold Hill and Rogue River and along the, in Grants Pass, I have Merlin and some of those kind of along a corridor, kind of got that northeast tip of the Applegate, and then Central Point actually is one of the biggest communities.
So,
and I will be spending, you asked what before what I would be doing in the interim, and I am going to be spending, you know, I know Douglas County really well, and I'm very at home here. This is the county that I have served in many, at many levels, but you know, there's still a lot of those communities south of me that I need to get in there. They're very similar demographically to Douglas County, but I need to get in there in a lot bigger way with coffee clutches and town halls and going to be in a few parades and just get to know the communities and what their needs are and be ready for my next session.
Now, is there a scheduled committee work through the summer at all?
Yeah, well, we will start Ledge Days again at the end of September. We will, and those where the committee meetings start again. We also, within a couple weeks here, we'll start drafting some of our legislative concepts and getting those. We often come out of session with things that we want to keep going that we weren't successful in getting that bill through. So we will rework those things and get those submitted. And then November, we will also have legislative days, and then we'll be back into short session in late January of 24. Sounds like it's a long ways away, but it's I can see my summer already really flying by.
Now, what about for the committee assignments? There are shifts sometimes. Does that start at the beginning of the next calendar year?
Yes, that's the speaker's option to start shifting things around a bit. So I suspect, though, there won't be a whole lot of that because this is not an election year. So I am very deeply involved with healthcare, with behavioral health, and with Joint Ways and Means Human Services. I imagine he's going to keep me there. I have had a good working relationship with the chair. We disagree on many big issues, but we work together as well as we can, and I have spent a lot of time understanding healthcare issues in our state. So I would like to stay on and do that. And a lot of my bills were related to healthcare, and many of them actually, I must say, were successful in that they were grouped in an omnibus bill. So I worked on CCO contract extensions and more workforce credits and incentives in nursing and other area levels of the medical allied field. I worked on a lot of hospital issues, like what to do with these post-acute care patients. So a lot of this stuff really ended up getting grouped in with other bills.
All right, out of time for now. An instant check-in on the legislature and the perception of State Representative Christine Goodwin. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hello. Thank you, Kyle. Bye-bye.
All right, 1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.